DW Africa Link.
A very warm welcome to DW's Africa Link on this Wednesday, the 16th of October. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. Remember that we are broadcasting live from our studios in Bonn, Germany, from Monday up to Friday throughout the week. Coming up, Kenya opens a $1.5 billion Chinese-built railway linking Rift Valley town and Nairobi. But many Kenyans are not excited about this milestone.
Just a waste of time, and it's there to hurt the taxpayers. We don't need the extension, especially we don't have the funding.
The SGR going through the park, the SGR might just knock the wild animals.
At least one person has been killed during vote counting in Mozambique, coming a day after a day of relative peaceful elections. Some NGOs have raised concerns over incidences of voter fraud.
The provinces where things got hectic, namely disorganized queuing, voter intimidation, and situations of violence between law enforcement and voters.
Right, we have that and much more, but first, the world news in brief.
DW News.
And my name is Jen Nyingi. The Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan has rejected calls for a ceasefire in the offensive launched in northern Syria against Kurdish militias. Erdogan says the military operation will continue until their troops reach some 35 kilometers inside Syria. In the meantime, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo are on their way to Turkey to push for an end to the fighting. This follows the U.S. imposed economic sanctions on Turkey for its incursion. Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Çavuşoğlu has termed the sanctions as unacceptable.
Vice President Pence and U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo are planning to visit our country for talks. We'll communicate our thoughts and the views of our people to them. I want to say, when it's a matter of protecting our national interests, other people's opinion is inconsequential. Of course, we'll react to these sanctions, and I take the necessary steps.
Turkey has insisted the only way to end the current crisis is Kurdish militias laying down their weapons and leaving the border area. Pope Francis is calling for lifestyle and dietary changes to address the paradox of a world in which people suffer from malnutrition in some areas and obesity in others. In his message to mark this year's United Nations World Food Day, Pope Francis noted that while obesity used to be a problem of the developed world, it's increasingly wreaking havoc in poorer countries. He also said that it was sad more than 800 million people sleep hungry. Opposition lawmakers in Hong Kong have disrupted a major policy speech by the territory leader. Carrie Lam was heckled and called on to meet the five demands of Hong Kong's protest movement, which include free and fair elections.
It is everybody's wish that Hong Kong could come out of this crisis and return to normal as soon as possible, because the damage done to Hong Kong is now already very severe, and nobody wants to see the continuation of the current situation. But to achieve that, we must not sort of give up or deviate from the very fundamental principles that get Hong Kong going.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. EU officials are warning that significant issues remain to secure an agreement on the UK's departure from the bloc. But Ireland's Prime Minister Leo Varadkar says he hopes any sticking points can be resolved later today. That would allow member states a chance to consider any deal before Thursday's EU summit, the last scheduled heads of government meeting before the UK's scheduled departure on October 31st. And finally, FIFA President Gianni Infantino said he was disappointed that World Cup qualifier between North and South Korea was played on an empty stadium and no live broadcast. The rare match in the North Korean capital ended 0-0 on Tuesday, with Infantino one of the few people in attendance. No foreign media attended the game. For more news and information, head on to our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Jen Nyingi.
And you're listening to DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. Thanks for tuning in wherever you are listening from. I see we have Mohamed Sumare who is writing there. He's listening. I don't know where you're listening from. And you have many more of you. Let us know what you think about these stories we are covering.
Thanks indeed, Zippy. And before we delve straight into the stories, some breaking news now. The number of people who have been killed in the protest in Guinea has turned to be 9. They are protesting against the president's bid to extend his time in power while hospitals are overwhelmed with scores of people wounded. It is a story that we might come to later on when we have time. Now, to begin with, Kenya has today launched a $1.5 billion Chinese-built railway line linking Nairobi to the Rift Valley. Upgrading Kenya Railways has been part of Beijing's One Belt, One Road initiative, marked billion-dollar infrastructure projects aimed at improving land and maritime trade routes between Asia and Africa.
However, many Kenyans have lamented that accumulating debts the country owes China. In April, China said it would fund a fraction of the project due to viability concerns. Joining us now from Nairobi is our correspondent, Andrew Wasike, who first describes how the mood was during today's launch.
There was mass disappointment amongst Kenyans. And actually, this story has been really underreported, unlike the first time, because every Kenyan was glued to their television. Everybody was on the streets. They wanted to know where this is going, you know. But today, many Kenyans have just expressed shock. I spoke to Kenyans on the streets of Nairobi, and this is what they had to say.
I think this is proof that our government is wasting our money. Just a waste of time, and it's there to hurt the taxpayers. We don't need the extension, especially we don't have the funding.
The SGR going through the park, the SGR might just knock the wild animals that will be reducing the wildlife, hence it will be interfering with our tourism sector that really depend on the wildlife.
Very skeptical voices there from the Kenyans. Has the government come up with clear plans how it hopes to repay this debt to China?
The government says that they have a plan, yes, but don't forget that Kenya has an appetite for borrowing. There was a survey by the Institute of Economic Affairs, and they were saying that within 10 years, if we continue with the trend which we are on right now, then we risk defaulting in repaying our debt. The government is saying that it has actually improved the tax collection system, which is very true. The prices of things are becoming expensive because the government said that, you know, this project is ours. We all have to chip in. Okay, that is okay. And we keep borrowing more and more and more, meaning that it is unsustainable.
The other issue people have been raising is that in some of these projects, the Chinese are actually employing one of their own, but not the locals. Are there plans to employ more locals in this case of this second phase of the SGR?
On that point, Zipporah, I can tell you clearly there is no plans to include Kenyans when it comes to the workforce in this project. Why? The Chinese railway company which is building the railway line is not actually under any trade unions here in Kenya.
Critics have called this second phase of SGR a white elephant and one that is not viable. Why?
It is considered a white elephant because, you know, China have only agreed to support Kenya up to Suswa, and Kenya is also chipping in up to Suswa, but there is nothing in Suswa. There are villages there, so the Kenyans don't get how they will benefit from this second phase because it is not viable.
Thank you, Andrew Wasike, for that report telling us how it is in Kenya. And Isaac, we have also been getting lots of responses, of course, when you mention China in Africa.
Yes, we asked on our Facebook page, do the potential debt burden that goes with China's development initiatives in Africa worry you? To begin with, Nana Yo Jr. says they are taking advantage of our needs to exploit what we have.
And Razak Soja writing says, come to Ghana and you will be surprised by the in-depthness of the country to foreign governments.
Wisdom Bwanali says at least they did something with it, using it for public infrastructure. My country keeps on borrowing heavily and the parliament keeps on approving, and yet little is seen on the ground.
And I wrap up with Alade Isaac, who says the borrower is a slave to the lender. Thank you very much for your comments. We now move on to another story making global headlines. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has rejected calls for a ceasefire in the offensive it launched in northern Syria against Kurdish militias. The Turkish government views one of the main militias as a terrorist group.
There have been strong reactions from NATO and other Western countries about Turkey's operations in Syria, with some critics calling for its suspension from NATO. For more, here's Michael Oti.
Turkish forces and Kurdish fighters were still battling heavily today over the border town of Ras Al Ain. President Tayyip Erdogan has turned down calls for a ceasefire and maintains they will only stop if Syrian Kurdish fighters leave a designated border area.
For this reason, our proposal is for the terrorists to lay down their arms, their equipment, everything, destroy the traps they've created, and leave the safe zone we have designed as of tonight.
As the fighting continues, the UN envoy to Syria, Geir Pedersen, says the situation is getting dire.
And that we are extremely alarmed by the humanitarian consequences of the crisis, and that we today have seen already too many people killed, and of course more than 160,000 people being displaced.
There have been strong reactions from European countries calling on Turkey to stop the attacks. Some critics have openly called for Turkey to be removed from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. Germany and France, along with Sweden, Finland and Netherlands, have stopped arms export to Turkey, but the country insists that this will have little effect.
Michael Oti with that report. Back to Africa, police in Mozambique have shot dead one person and injured four others at a polling station where votes were being counted following national elections. That's according to the Center for Public Integrity. The presidential, parliamentary and provincial elections, which are considered crucial to stability in the Southern African country, have been marred by reports of pre-marked ballots, ballot stuffing and the obstruction of observers.
Well, but President Filipe Nyusi, on the other hand, praised Mozambicans for deciding their destiny in elections and called for peace and calm to continue. Eddie Micah Jr. has more.
The counting of ballots that will determine whether the vote goes to the ruling Frelimo party or its main rival, the former rebel Renamo party, is still underway. Voting took place without serious incident, despite fears of violence. However, one representative of the Independent Electoral Transparency Platform spoke of worrying developments in some parts of the country.
The provinces where things got hectic were Zambezia, Inambani, and Manica. The unrest in these places were essentially due to three factors, namely disorganized queuing, voter intimidation, and situations of violence between law enforcement and voters.
Mozambique's Center for Public Integrity said there were cases where voters turned up at polling stations to discover that their names were not on the voters' roll. The electoral body has promised to investigate. President Nyusi is widely expected to win his second five-year term, despite a decline in his popularity due to chronic unrest and alleged state corruption. Preliminary results are expected on Friday.
Eddie Micah Jr. with that report. And as usual, elections come with complaints from the opposition. This is the reason we asked whether you see any parallels in your part of Africa. Arnold Epanti very quickly sent us a message saying, yes, as a rule, ruling parties always win elections in Africa, he thinks.
Yeah, that's a very sad state. And we have Chinemenum Okafor, who says we already know the winner. The ideology of the other party, if not checked and truthfully worked on, will always keep them away from occupying the presidential palace.
Well, the good thing is that according to preliminary reports, the election was carried out in a peaceful environment. That's according to some of the observers and analysts who spoke to DW's Department of the Portuguese for Africa. One comment from Quest Black Molotov, that's what he calls himself. says, believe it or not, the opposition did nothing to win this election. Their own problems caused all of this. Since Renamo leader Afonso Dhlakama died, there is nothing but problems. And I very quickly to remind you some breaking news. At least 7 protesters were killed by security forces in Guinea this week. 2 were killed today. That brings the total number of protesters killed 9 during demonstrations against a possible change in the constitution that could let President Alpha Conde seek a third term. This is a story that we're also following closely, and we shall always bring it to you whenever we can. Welcome back to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. A warm welcome to all of you listening to us on our partner radio stations and, of course, on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We have Musaj Yamer and we have Donald Abba and we have someone listening to us all the way from Spain. His name is Mohamed Sumare. Mm. Thank you very much. Keep it here, DW Africa.
Wow. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Rwanda announces plans to phase out petrol taxi motorbikes, or popularly known as Boda Boda in East Africa, and Okada in West Africa, particularly Nigeria, for electric ones because of environmental concerns. But the operators are not happy about the decision.
The electric motorbikes will be more expensive for the riders compared to gas motorbikes, and many people will find it hard to do business.
Okay, Zippy, now, for the sake of protecting the environment, they want to phase out your Boda Bodas, let's say if it was Kenya. How easy would it be?
It's not easy because there are actually people who rely on Boda Bodas, these taxis.
Yes, they are not banning Boda Bodas, but they want to phase out those that use petrol to introduce electric motorbikes.
That's an expensive venture, if you ask me, Isaac, because we know they are not really cheap, one. Mm-hmm. And two, it will also be a challenge for men who cannot afford it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's your take, which is actually close to what our reporter says. But anyway, that's all coming. Don't miss out. First to Liberia, where freedom of the press under President George Weah is slowly taking a downward trend, even though Weah repealed some of the harsh media laws. Most recently, the government shut down 3 radio stations in the capital, Monrovia, including a famous one called Room FM, and confiscated equipment belonging to the stations.
You're right, Isaac. Root FM, owned and operated by popular talk show host Henry Costa, was closed down for criticizing President George Weah's administration. And we have our correspondent there, DW's Evelyn Pade, who has been following this.
The recent clampdown on the media has shocked many media practitioners after President George Weah repealed harsh media laws. Constitutional and human rights lawyers like Councillor Tiawon Gunglo are describing the recent clampdown on Root FM as a sad day and violation of the government's own call for free speech.
The first action is not to seize their communication equipment and thereby stop the operation of the radio station. It's not good for our democracy. It is, in my view, unlawful because it's a violation of our constitution. Article 14 and Article 15, right of people to think, to hold opinion, and to express those opinions. The right for people to know everything about the government and its functionaries. If anybody uses lethal weapon or uses instruments that could harm other people, the government has a right. But communication gadgets are not lethal instruments. They were instruments of crime when we had the 3 laws that criminalized speech. They are no more. And so there is no legal basis for seizing the communication equipment of the radio stations.
The Press Union of Liberia, the umbrella group that protects and advocates for journalists and media institutions in Liberia, says it has been investigating circumstances leading to the closure of the stations, but holds tightly to the promotion of ethical journalistic practice and the rule of law. Charles Coffey is the president of Liberia's Press Union.
We investigated, went at the court. It was a writ of seizure and then arrest warrant. The police were accompanied by sheriff. The first thing I invited some members of the staff of the station, they told me the boss told them not to receive the writ. So the next day they went and enforced the writ. So the PUS subscribed to the rule of law. The issue with the writ should be challenged in court rather than engaging in acts that will portray violence. Besides that, there are few stations in the country country that we have identified, we have warned them, that engaging in hate messages, it is a complete violation of our ethical standards.
What are those stations?
Roots FM and Freedom FM. I have cited them to go to the National Media Council. Mr. Costa told me he was a political commentator. He's not on our jurisdiction. That I believe he's not a member of the union, but he's using a media platform. So we are looking at professional aspects. They should be ethical, and they should make sure they respect societal norms.
However, the government justifies the closure of Wood FM and seizure of their equipment for failure to adhere to the Liberia Telecommunications Authority's regulation.
Imlin Pade with that report. And we did ask on our Facebook page, President George Weah of Liberia repealed some really harsh media laws recently, but now he's shut down three radio stations that are critical of him. What's up with that? Isaac, I cannot say how people have been responding, but many seem to support him.
Mm-hmm. Emmanuel Sako in Liberia says, I agree with my president. These stations, among others, are using their platform and calling for a popular uprising on December 30th.
And in Tongo, Ivo Nyo, I hope I got that right, says, I support his move.
Well, there's one here who tries to differ from other comments. Kanchinga Mioba says, African leaders and their critics, they want praise all the time. They become drunk with power and end up, you know, sinking low. We have also another one from Rancy, who says, freedom of speech comes with responsibility. Keep up the debate flowing on a Facebook page, DW Africa.
On the spot.
Let's spread our wings in neighboring Ghana, where the Salaga slave market in the north of the country was key in the business of buying and selling people from as far afield as Burkina Faso, long before transatlantic slave traders came along. Zippy, did you know that?
Well, a little bit of it, not quite everything.
Well, let me tell the story now. The site lies vacant and neglected today, and the heritage experts say they can't understand why the Europeans who enslaved Africans are generally in the spotlight when there is a talk of slavery in Africa.
Ghana declared 2019 as the year of return to provide opportunity for the global African family abroad to mark the 400 years of the arrival of the first enslaved Africans. But the Salaga market, which was a major trading point of slaves, has been totally ignored by the government, as Maxwell Suk reports.
A lush green forest is all that is left of these once major points where European slave traders meet to exchange captured Africans. Part of the market is occupied by stalls where street traders sell little commodities like pepper, salt, and sandals. At the entrance, a dusty signpost leaning on a massive baobab tree welcomes visitors, often from the United States, seeking to connect to their roots. Tour guide Suleimana Idrisu shows me one of the water wells where slaves were held.
So where we are standing is, I mean, the sitting or the baths here. At my back, you can see one. You know, each of the baths, they have to put some big pot in the middle of each bath. So when they carry the water, they pour it in that desk. So two, three will get inside, wash down, and come out. After washing down, they are farming this shea butter oil, then smash them, make them fine before taking them to the market.
Idrisu takes me through the forested land and into the main building that holds artifacts, which is now completely dilapidated. Historically, this market served as the last point for captured slaves from Burkina Faso, an extreme part of northern Ghana, before their final journey. According to Idrisu, slave trading at this market began way before European traders started the transatlantic slave trade.
The white man didn't come to Salaga here to buy the slave. It was the Ashantis who started buying them. Those who brought them here were the houses and the Moshis. They brought them here. And who was their landlord? The Gunja chief was then, our grandparents were the landlords. Before you do something, you have to see the landlord. So when this thing started, they have to see the landlord. Then from there, they brought the slaves and then the chiefs and everybody who wants to buy a slave, a man, a woman, just come to the market and buy your tin and then take the person to your house.
In the 18th and 19th centuries, Salaga served as a key market town, particularly for kola nut trading between modern-day Ghana and Nigeria. However, Salaga had a monopoly over trade to the north and trade to the south of Ghana. Situated in the southernmost reaches of the Sahel, Salaga was referred to as a Timbuktu of the south for its cosmopolitan population and varied trade. Tour guide and heritage specialist Suleimani Idrisu is not happy about current state of the Salaga market.
This place has been neglected, and this should have been the first place the government should put hands, you know, to do all those things here in Salaga, because Salaga was the first place where they took the slaves to the coast. And Salaga has been what? Has been neglected. And we cannot tell why. It has been neglected. So when you come to Salaga, what you are seeing, you only see the market, and you see this baba tree. And this is not the original baba tree. The original baba tree was somewhere there, and it fell around 24 June 1970.
The year of return, Ghana 2019, is a major landmark marketing campaign targeting the African-American and diaspora market to mark 400 years of the first enslaved Africans arriving in Jamestown, Virginia.
Maxwell Sook with that report. There's been a mix of comments. Emmanuel Recibe says it's the Ghanaian leaders who keep hiding the site. Who knows why the government has neglected such sites since independence?
And we have Umar Abdullahi who says, I've been to Salaga four times this year and I did not even notice there's such a historical site over there. And he's promising us pictures when he goes there.
Well, thank you very much for the comments.
Living Planet Africa.
For Living Planet today, we head to Rwanda. The government is phasing out motorcycles that use petrol and replace them with electric ones. This is to curb carbon emissions and reduce on-air pollution.
Well, taxi motorbike, also commonly known as boda boda in the region, are the common and fastest means of travel within Kigali City and other major towns in the country. Alex Ngalambe reports.
In Kigali alone, there are over 20 to 30,000 taxi motorbikes and an estimated 50,000 countrywide. Although taxi motor riders have no option but to replace their old bikes with electric motors, they are worried that the electric ones are costly. Some of the riders, like 26-year-old Ahmed Mutware, question whether indeed bikes emit dangerous fumes that can pollute the environment.
Our motorbikes do not emit carbon into the sky. The only bikes that emit fumes are those that have mechanical problems. But once fixed in the garage by installing pistons, fumes don't come out.
Venuste Gasago, a taxi motor rider who has already acquired the electric motorbike, says the new bikes do not pollute the air as opposed to the gas bikes.
Yes, it is true that the patrol motorbikes like TVS 125 that are being phased out more often release a lot of fumes in the air, which would be harmful to humans and the environment.
The government is rolling out a pilot phase from the capital before importing over 500 electric bikes. The government also intends to extend the project in other parts of the country. However, tax riders are complaining about the price of the electric bikes as well as weak batteries that work for a few hours. The electric motors will be more expensive and riders are worried it could mark the end of their business.
The electric motorbikes will be more expensive for the riders compared to gas motorbikes, and many people will find it hard to do business.
Frank Habineza, a member of parliament representing the Democratic Green Party of Rwanda, himself an environmentalist, told DW that the motorbike business is booming and employs thousands of the youth.
No, motorbikes are not the biggest contributors. They contribute a little, but they are not the biggest. The biggest contributors, of course, are these vehicles, for the factories.
Efforts to get a comment from Rwanda Environment Management Authority were futile. For now, taxi motor riders can only hope by the time the pilot phase ends, they will have saved enough money to buy electric bikes.
Alex Ngalambe with that report on how Rwanda intends to phase out motorbikes that use petrol and replace them with electric ones. This is all in a bid to curb down on carbon emissions and ensure that there's no air pollution. Now,
well, Isaac, I have to ask you because you've been and you are from Rwanda. Shoot. Are you supporting these initiatives?
Shoot the question. Well, all initiatives that are aimed at curbing down on carbon emissions, I would support them. But how they're implemented is another question. One thing is that these motorbikes, every 65 kilometers they travel, they have to recharge. And they're expensive, so it's not easy for everyone to afford it. And well, with that, we come to the end of the show. On behalf of the production crew, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura.
Bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.